Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is author Jeff Hobbs. His 2014 book, The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace, won the Los Angeles Times Book Prize and was a notable book of the year from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and NPR. That book told the story of his brilliant college roommate and friend, Robert Peace, who escaped poverty and street life of Newark, New Jersey for Yale University, only to die violently on those same streets just shy of his 31st birthday. Hobbs' latest book, Show Them That You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels Before College, tells the story of four boys in their 2016-2017 senior year as they apply for college. Two boys attend Animo Pat Brown Charter High School in Compton, South Los Angeles. Two attend Beverly Hills High School. Vastly different backgrounds and socioeconomic conditions as they negotiate their lives and futures. Carlos seems bound for great things. He's headed for an Ivy League school despite not speaking English when he began elementary school and working on his DACA papers, and his parents are being evicted from their house during his senior year. Tio is also bound for college, but not with the same options as Carlos, and is dealing with a father who sees no benefits to a college education. For John and Owen at Beverly Hills High, they confront very different challenges. Owen is the son of Hollywood elites. There's little doubt he will go to college. He just has to decide on a future path. John is also bound for an elite college, but unlike many of his classmates, his family live in a tiny apartment to be in the right school district for opportunities to come his way, and also the attendant family pressures that come with that decision. Hobbs' conversations with these young men ignite conversations about class, race, expectation, and cultural divides. Jeff Hobbs is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Jeff Hobbs, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
Show Them You're Good follows four high school seniors and some of their friends as they prepare for college and life after high school during the 2016-2017 school year. In many ways, this follows up on your previous book, The Short Traffic Life of Robert Peace, which you went back and traced your college roommate's life. What was the purpose of finding these young men and following them in that final year of high school?
Thank you for asking. And you're right. This is kind of a bridge from the short and tragic life of Robert Peace. And that book was about a friend of mine. It was a very personal, a pretty difficult project, mainly because my friend passed away and I missed him. But something sort of terrifying happened after that book about Rob Peace came out, which was that a lot of schools started asking me to come visit and talk and give assemblies and visit classes. And you can probably already tell after 2 minutes that I was never meant to speak in public or really speak in general. But it was a real privilege. And so I just got myself places and sat with groups of mostly high school students and talked about, you know, race and access and entitlement and very pretty big issues. But what happened was a lot of these young people just started, there was something about Rob Peace that brought them to share their own stories, pretty powerful stories about their families and their aspirations. And I kind of carried those home with me from different spots all over the country and started thinking maybe there's some value in showing what it looks like and feels like to be 17 years old in America.
So did these young men find you?
That's kind of exactly what happened. I mean, I reached out to some teachers that I knew, and, you know, I learned that very few principals are interested in having some awkward journalist like me wander around their hallways. But these two schools opened their doors, and I guess they just sent an email to the senior class at each school, one in South L.A. near Compton and one in Beverly Hills. And, yeah, these kids just sort of came to meet and, for whatever reason, decided to give a lot of their time to me during a year in their lives when they didn't have that much time.
It must have been an interesting process, you know, reaching these young men and having them open up to you, because I can imagine your average high school senior, if a journalist comes up and starts asking them questions, they might indulge them for 20 minutes, and then it's like, dude, get away.
Yeah, that is what I somewhat expected when we started. I think a big draw was that I brought food.
Smart
which,
move.
You know, at least got me in the door. If In-N-Out Burger has had a platinum membership, then I would probably be top of the list. Yeah, the center, I guess, of the research for this book, Show Them You're Good, was I would meet with these small groups of senior boys at each school for once a week for maybe 2 or 3 hours. And again, they would eat, and I'd just kind of ask them what's going on with their college applications. A lot of family stuff came up, and they seemed to, I mean, I ended up talking very little during these meetings. Maybe I'd have prompts. Mostly they seemed to enjoy being with each other in a quiet space where they could just kind of reflect and share, and most importantly, they could listen to each other.
What comes off from these young men is they're all really nice. Show Them You're Good is absolutely the right title. All these young men are so nice, have such interesting stories about them. But what I found really interesting was that, yes, there is this contrast in the socioeconomic issues of each of these schools, but there's also these interesting dichotomies. You know, as much as the charter high school probably feels some sort of sense of inferiority in some of their interactions with their high schools, Beverly Hills High School has the opposite reaction of being a place where, you know, it's looked down upon because of its high socioeconomic class.
Yeah, it was interesting for me, and both of these neighborhoods have pretty embedded stigmas attached to them. Beverly Hills, especially if you watched television in the 90s.
That's right, Beverly Hills 90210, yeah.
You think you have a pretty good idea, and the neighborhood of Compton, obviously much celebrated and maligned in popular culture. What I sort of love about young people, teenagers, and teenage boys in particular, is that they tell you what they think of you, even if they're not saying it out loud. You know, they don't really wear masks the way a lot of adults I know wear masks. So, for instance, when we first sat down in each of these schools, my line, I guess, was that, you know, I don't want you guys to try to represent your neighborhood or your race or your class or even your schools, you know, as much as possible. I would be grateful if you just tried to represent yourself. And they all kind of looked at me when I said that. I mean, that was my earnest intention, but, you know, they looked at me and said, dude, there's a reason you're in a school in a super rich neighborhood and one of the poorest neighborhoods in the county. So, you know, don't try to sugarcoat it.
Own it, I guess. Well, when we meet these young men, obviously Carlos and Tio are two amazing young men, very close friends. Carlos is a super achiever, yet he is undocumented. When we meet him, he is working through his application for DACA in the fall of 2016, which as the school year goes on, it becomes even a larger degree of trepidation for his future, which is incredibly bright. Really, both of these young men are really amazing young men that, you know, shows through in your narrative.
I mean, Carlos, you know, he was born in an itinerant fruit picking community. He didn't speak English when he began American elementary school, and then 12 years later, as you said, he's applying for deferred action for childhood arrivals and Ivy League universities at the same time. And at the same time, his parents are also being evicted, and a president's being elected on a platform of sort of vilifying people like him, and all this very real, visceral noise in his life. And yet he was just so humble. You'd never really know it. And Carlos is a kid that, you know, you read about in the newspaper. You know, he's sort of carrying that narrative our society has of this is what people are capable of when they're given a chance. But what was really interesting and kind of a quieter struggle from spending so much time with him had to do with the burden of that narrative, particularly with his peers, you know, friends like Tio, friends he'd grown up with who, you know, weren't applying to the upper tier schools, weren't on that track. And some of the resentment that built up against him that he had to deal with, that, you know, it was hard. He carried a lot.
And he had a lot of family expectations because his older brother had achieved and gone to Yale, was at Yale, and I think it was just expected for him, too.
Yeah, and that was another kind of interesting thing, was not only is he carrying all these achievements and, you know, representing his school that way, but he's also in that plight of living in his older brother's shadow, toward a long shadow. That's a plight, you know, you wouldn't normally associate with a very poor, undocumented kid from Compton.
You contrast that with Tio, who's in many ways his best friend, also equally accomplished in the classroom. But his life is a great contrast, because he has a mother that deeply cares about him, but a father who has been struggling with alcoholism and really doesn't see the value of education. And yet here is Tio persisting. He had a spate of grade issues earlier in his high school career, but by the time he is in a high school senior, he's taking AP calculus, you know, high level science and math courses, and excelling. And yet he's not getting the same opportunities.
Yeah, all those things you said. I really admire Tio, and Tio's a tremendous storyteller, so he was just entertaining to be in the room with a lot. But he had this really complicated relationship with his father and his father's addiction to alcohol, which was really bad. And the reason Tio aspired so strongly to be an engineer and to get those good grades and take those APs was because he grew up watching his dad spend an hour at the junkyard and bring all this stuff home and build things out of it and fix his neighbor's AC units and their cars. And he was just inspired by that ability to make things and fix things. And yet his father was the one saying, like, why would you spend any time focusing on school? You're not going to be any better than me. It's just a waste of time. Just accept your station. I mean, you know, language that's rougher than what I just said, that's not really fit for radio. So, yeah, just this real friction inside. And then the college stuff didn't work out for Tio the way he'd worked for. And a lot of this book is about this national ethos we have of self-determination, which is drilled in very hard in schools, graduation speeches. You know, if you want it and you're passionate and you work hard, you can go get it. And a lot of this book is about these guys learning during this pivotal year that the lines are not that clean and you don't always get what you earned. And so I'm thinking of a moment when, you know, for Carlos, things worked out pretty spectacularly, and for Tio, they were a lot harder and messier. And I remember they were sitting together in the classroom, and Tio had just gotten some bad news, and he was just down on himself. And he was sounding, frankly, like his father. He was just saying, I don't know why would I work so hard for A's when I could have gotten C's and still be going to the same schools. And Carlos, who at that point was on his way to Yale, knew not to give him those platitudes that adults use, that platitudes like it's going to be all right and you're still in the driver's seat and blah, blah, blah. Carlos knew just to put his hand on Tio's shoulder and kind of sit with him and put his head down next to him, which that human silent contact, that was pretty powerful.
My guest today is Jeff Hobbs. He's an author, an L.A. Times Book Prize winning author for his previous book, The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace. His latest book is titled Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels the Year Before College. It's published by Scribner's, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we should say that both Carlos and Tio's make it to college. Just Tio doesn't get into any of the top-tier University of California schools. He goes to Riverside, but he finds his own place. But I want to contrast these two with the two that you profile most heavily from Beverly Hills High School. John, who is, again, the child of immigrants whose parents made enormous sacrifices to basically put themselves into a small apartment in the Beverly Hills High School school district so he can get these opportunities. He's another super achiever. But you contrast him with Owen, who is the son of a high-ranked Hollywood television show executive and writer and actress who is literally not really knowing where he wants to go in his life. And yet, you know, pathways open pretty easily for him.
A friend told me recently that the book would probably be easier to digest if the kids from Beverly Hills were all just real rich jerks.
Right, but they're not.
That would sort of fit, you know, our preconceptions a lot more cleanly. But they're not. They're, as you said, kind of lovely guys trying to figure out, you know, having serious thoughts, but knowing that nobody is really going to take their thoughts seriously because they're from Beverly Hills. And you have Owen, as you mentioned, who, if you hear the words Beverly Hills High School, that's kind of the perfect picture of the image that comes to mind. He's kind of this Hollywood family, very successful parents. He has a lot of ennui. He might argue with me for saying that, but he did. Just like I said, trying to figure out, in spite of his privilege, how to be a decent person. And it took a while before he mentioned this, but it's something it was a big part of him, was that his mom, who was an actress in soap operas and pretty creative and successful, she had been bedridden with a kind of a mysterious chronic illness since Owen was in eighth grade. And so every day after school, while kids went to the mall and whatnot, I was actually surprised to learn that kids still go hang out at the mall after school. but that's an aside. Owen would go home and, you know, sit in a chair by his mother's bed. She usually didn't have the energy to even lift her head, and he would just try to download his day and make her laugh. And so he knew life and the randomness of chance and cruelty and things that you wouldn't really associate with kids from Beverly Hills. And then John is probably a more typical Beverly Hills student in that his family was not wealthy, and what money they did have, they spent most of it in order to live in that district specifically so that he could go to through that public school system, which is a pretty good system. So his journey, his mother was Chinese and his father's Jewish, and there was kind of a weird mix of Eastern shame and Western guilt pouring on him all the time. And
this is true.
Sharing a small space with your parents is not really easy at any age, but particularly when you're 17. And he was just figuring out that a lot of the friction between parents and children comes from love.
My guest today, Jeff Hobbs, his new book is titled Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels the Year Before College. He follows four boys, two from Beverly Hills High School, two from Pat Brown Charter High School near Compton in South L.A., as well as several of their friends who sort of enter into the story at various times. And of course, you're following them during the 2016-2017 school year. They're watching the election of President Trump take place during their school year. And you're seeing, like in Beverly Hills High School, you're seeing protests break out during lunch period where you have some young kids yelling, build the wall, and other kids counter-protesting. And then you have young people from like the Charter High School where they're Latino, and they're looking at being portrayed as an enemy of the state in certain ways.
So, I mean, I started spending time with these guys in August of that year. So the election was well underway, but at that point, you know, the outcome at least seemed predictable. And then it turned out different than, you know, most people expected.
And of course, you're in Southern California, which, you know, yes, it would seem like the election was foreordained who was going to win.
And I certainly was not interested in writing a political book, really. But that election, regardless of politics, was a really signal moment, especially because these guys were kind of engaging in the political apparatus for the very first time. Probably half of them were old enough to vote in November of that year. But what was interesting in Beverly Hills is that, I mean, L.A. is somewhat of a liberal bubble, and it's everything that comes with that designation. But Beverly Hills has a pretty large conservative presence for different reasons, mostly because of money. So you actually had very different views in the same space. And what was kind of touching was, again, regardless of your views, was that these young men could actually talk about it, and they could disagree, and they could hear things that were emotionally upsetting, and things could get tense while they sort of unpacked the election and its ramifications and came from different places. But they could talk and they could listen. And in the meantime, at least in my orbit, no adult I knew could have those conversations without, you know, getting pretty steamed and pretty irrational. So I don't know. That gave me a lot of hope. And then across town at Animo Pep Brown with Carlos and Tio, I mean, the election I mentioned earlier, it was a pretty visceral moment because of the platforms that were put forward regarding people who looked like them. And what was powerful there was that, you know, these guys, Carlos was undocumented, and, you know, there were walkouts all across the neighborhood they lived in. But these guys seemed to really want to be in school and be in U.S. history class and be in AP government class and keep building that knowledge on top of the emotions they were having. And I sort of asked them, I mean, isn't it depressing to take exams about these systems that don't seem very kind to you guys and your parents? And they said, the knowledge actually helps us be less scared, which I thought was just a tender way to manage all that.
Well, I have to ask you, and we should mention that your four protagonists all are doing well in college so far, seemingly. I guess at this point they would be graduating, just about ready to graduate. So, but what I really found interesting, and maybe this is just a change from generations, but what I found overwhelmingly in the narrative was the senior years about, I've got to go to college. And not the usual conversations about, you know, relationships, either same sex or opposite sex. None of those sorts of things. I'm wondering if that was something you made a decision in your narrative to focus on college, or is this college application process, especially in California, where you have such a super competitive system to get into the University of California system, you know, is it overwhelming in the top of their mind during the senior year?
It's very overwhelming. I should say that, you know, some of these guys did have girlfriends, and one guy had a boyfriend, and that was difficult with his family. I mean, they were engaging in all of that youthful stuff, and that was important emotionally. And Tio, in particular, most of the time he talked, he was either talking about skateboarding, which is actually where the title of the book comes from, Show Them You're Good, or else he was talking about arguments he was having with his girlfriend. It's like you said, with the UCs and just the hyper competition, even for public school, I guess relative to where I was now 20 years ago, they're just so much more connected to it, and the decimals and the competition and kind of knowing all the time where everybody's positioned in the process of applying to college seemed really intense. And as a storyteller, what I was really interested in was the fact that applying to college, again, no matter where you're applying, is actually an act of storytelling, kind of a bizarre act of storytelling with the essays and even the financials and stuff you're revealing about your parents. And so these guys were all, along with millions of other people their age in America, they're all sort of projecting their own stories out there alongside strangers. And that, you know, if you have kids going through the process, you probably know how many questions that raises regarding self-worth and the decisions you've made to this point, and whether that C in, you know, history class freshman year really is going to haunt you and actually affect the course of your life. And and all these really heavy questions during a time of life that, as you mentioned, with girlfriends and hanging out, you know, it's kind of the last time of your life that should feel pretty frivolous.
Yeah. Tell us about how these young men, you stay in touch with them. You give us an update going into their second year of college, but how are they doing now?
Oh, they're good. And I actually talked to a couple of them yesterday, and it's been really nice to catch up with them. It's been, they're all good. And interestingly, all the guys at Onomopep Brown, when they graduated high school, were wanting to be engineers, just like
right.
Tio, I think.
Uh-huh.
One thing I learned is that all high school kids seem to hate English class, which kind of breaks my heart. But I didn't say too much about it. But I think they've really been inculcated with the idea that stable, good jobs are going to be in the STEM fields. But as they went through college, all of them except Tio actually pivoted to other tracks like political science, maybe to be lawyers, and so that was pretty interesting.
But they're all doing well and on track to graduate.
One young man named Byron was a year behind because the application process didn't go very well for him. But he sort of regathered himself after graduating high school and got into a Cal State school. Four-year school, and they're all doing well, and they're sort of enduring this particular moment in time the way I kind of expected, kind of with some grace and a lot of humility. I would say it was interesting because I let them all read the book when I was writing it, and they really helped me edit, which I guess is probably not typical for this kind of nonfiction journalistic work, but I thought for fact checking and just to be respectful of all the time and all the emotions that these guys shared, I thought it was respectful to include them in the actual writing process. But what was sort of funny was that even a year or two removed from high school, they were reading about themselves in high school, and they couldn't even believe some of the things they said and did.
Yeah, we shouldn't have a mirror from our high school days. No, in no way, shape, or form. Well, it's a really interesting book, and I'm really happy that these young men, who are all fun to read about and genuinely seem to be nice young men, are doing well. The name of the book is "Show Them You're Good." Jeff, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was really meaningful to talk with you.
Author Jeff Hobbs is my guest today. His new book is titled "Show Them You're Good: A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels the Year Before College." It's published by Scribner's. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.